This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guests today are both from Market Connections, Lisa DeZutti, founder and CEO, and Monica Make, who is the business development and marketing guru over at Market Connections. Welcome, guys. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Mark. Nice to be here.
I don't think anybody doesn't know the company, but let's get a little background just in case.
Certainly. Market Connections is the leading provider of custom primary market research in the federal and government contracting space, and we've been at it for nearly 20 years now. Hard to believe, and I think I've known you for more than even those 20 years, back to my GTSI days.
Yep, I remember when you left to start the company, and the incoming CEO took umbrage, thinking it was personal. And I said, no, it's not personal. She's wanted to do this for a long time. And that was true.
And those years have gone by very quickly.
They have indeed, way too damn fast. Monica.
Well, I handle marketing and business development for Market Connections, and one of my primary roles is to work with our clients on their thought leadership research and the campaigns that come out of that. And I also manage a lot of the thought leadership research that we do for the industry in general. So in terms of client work, you'll see thought leadership studies from clients such as Dell Software, NetApp, and other technology firms that are looking to really, position as thought leaders around the challenges that government IT professionals are facing when it comes to, choosing the right solutions, dealing with their budget issues, and the cybersecurity concerns as well. And on the Market Connection side, our thought leadership studies are really more focused on helping clients that are in the marketing and business development space in federal government put together the right marketing strategies and thought leadership campaigns that will help them connect and make an impact with their government customers.
Connect and make an impact with. That's basically the theme of this show. What kinds of marketing are going to resonate with the customer? And you're not going to know that without research. And we're going to talk specifically about two studies from Market Connections today, the Federal Marketing or Federal Media and Marketing Study and the Federal Content Marketing Review. Content marketing is hot. A couple of years back, it's actually 3 years back now, but I use this slide regularly in my presentations because it doesn't change. Marketing challenges. Number one is, has been, and shall remain for the foreseeable future, reaching decision makers or key personnel. Hello. That's been with us forever.
Forever. It has morphed a little bit. In recent years, we've heard that it's even more of a challenge than it has ever been. And our government contractor clients are having increasing difficulty getting in, not just at events, and we'll probably touch on events today, but they're not getting face-to-face time with them at events, nor are they able to get as many in-person meetings in their office. Those yeses are not coming as often as they used to.
Yeah, before Monica graduated from nursery school, you used to be able to go down to OPM,
you could walk the
halls, get a face card, and literally walk into any federal building outside of the intel community.
Yeah.
But Monica, I want to go back to what you said a moment ago, one of the ways you help customers, the thought leadership thing, and marketing largely is positioning your company as a leader, subject matter expert, thought leader in a particular niche. The content is also in that arena. When did you start seeing an uptick in that from what I will refer to, you don't have to, as more intelligent B2G marketers?
Well, I think in the past 3 years, I've really seen the interest increasing. So, you know, there's a challenge with differentiation in this market. There are a lot of companies that do very similar things and offer similar services, similar products, and everybody's looking to have an advantage over competitors that are, you know, thick in their space. A lot of them are bumping up against each other. So thought leadership is a great way to do that. Now, you know, we can all think of companies that have really smart individuals that you would consider thought leaders. But the thought leadership programs that we're working on with clients take that a step further and arm not just that one individual with information that makes them a thought leader, but really empowers an entire organization to demonstrate their thought leadership, because they will have their finger on the pulse of the market and understand from the market itself what those challenges are, what the needs are, how they're trying to overcome their budgetary issues, you know, the incredible pressure that government is under when it comes to decision making. And when you talk to government and get that validation from them about their challenges and concerns, and then you as a company can turn around and speak intelligently and in a knowledgeable way, it really does help you to position as more of a thought leader.
And I would just add to that that the past 2 or 3 years, contractors have been scrambling. Their revenues are down, budgets are tight, and they've been scrambling to get new contacts, new leads, get doors opened, and the thought leadership has helped them to do that. It's a much more tactical thing that they can do to help achieve some of their short-term goals.
At the same time, Mark, content marketing, as you mentioned earlier, is a hot topic in marketing in general. It's a hot topic in the marketing community. So I think that some in the government contracting community have really embraced that, because I think historically we have been a community of people that have a lot of knowledge about a lot of, you know, interesting technical things. And the government is relying on the contracting community to really guide that. So we're very well positioned to leverage that content marketing opportunity and put very good educational content into the marketplace.
I agree. And earlier today, I had a conversation with a client in a significant government contracting firm, Fortune 50 firm. The CTO was complaining, you know, when we send our second level execs, not the CEO, not the EVPs, but those other people out who actually do face-to-face calls, when these people are vetted on LinkedIn, they aren't subject matter experts. They, you know, their profiles barely have any information at all. So you have a public-facing site like LinkedIn. You could use any of the social networks to do this. But if there's no information to back up your position in the market after a meeting, you're toast.
Yeah, right. Yeah, asking the client to just take your word for it no longer flies.
No, it doesn't. And you know, to get to the marketing or media marketing study, the top impact of market conditions around the issues facing the marketers, the scramble, the knowledge base, the shrinking budgets, you know, less out-of-town travel has been with us for a while. They're attending fewer live events, on and on. Which of these do you see as most impactful?
Go ahead. I think the reliance on technology is really the direction we're going. So in lieu of that face-to-face interaction, mm-hmm. the opportunity to travel and, you know, whether it's in town or out of town, just even the opportunity to be out of the office, those are shrinking. And so government is turning to digital sources of information to stay abreast of technology, best practices, and keep themselves informed so that they can perform their jobs.
Leisure. I would agree. I would agree. Just the, I think in our industry, the past couple of years, the biggest impact has been the decline in events, and then pile budget restrictions on top of that, and that's just had a tremendous impact in the way contractors need to respond in this market, and then that funnels right into them having to pivot to more of the digital and content side. Some contractors have done that pivot quite well. Others, not so much. They're not there yet.
Yeah,
they're still stuck in the old ways of doing things.
And but the government isn't necessarily stuck because, you know, immediately following the you know, overall market conditions, time spent accessing media, the portion of the study indicates a definite rise in online activity.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing I see there in time spent accessing media is that we have an increasingly complex mix of media that's being consumed by government. So as a marketer or a business development professional, you can no longer rely on just a handful of channels. You really need to spread your message and your materials and yourself across many different types of media. It's no longer just an ad or just a particular website or just one social media channel. And in addition to channels, it's also how you position it. The individual is as important as the overall corporate message, and it needs to all mix together into that overall complexity of the message and how you're delivering it.
And traditional has not gone away, but contractors, have, as you've said, Monica, have had to add many more things to their marketing toolkit to cover this market successfully.
Yeah. And all of that while budgets are shrinking.
Right? Yeah, budgets are definitely shrinking. We're going to take a break. My guests today are Lisa DeZutti and Monica Make of Market Connections. You can find them at marketconnectionsinc.com. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. Again, my guests today are Monica Make and Lisa DeZutti, both of Market Connections. Find them at marketconnectionsinc.com. You know, we're talking about the online stuff. In 2013, I haven't seen stats for 2014 or obviously 2015, but in 2014, 41% of the access for LinkedIn was mobile. And your study shows a radical rise in the use of mobile in this market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in 2013, we did a pulse poll with Fierce Government IT, which was a short, quick poll of the government market, and it was broad. We didn't specify any particular job functions. We were just asking people in general how essential your mobile device is to your job. And I thought the results were very interesting. So we had 92% of people who are using both a smartphone and a tablet said that they felt significantly more productive at work. And we also had a significant amount of respondents saying that they feel mobile devices are critical to their job. 82% feel their mobile device is critical to their job. And 81% feel it increases their productivity. They're working more hours while traveling or commuting. That's about three quarters. And about two thirds said that their mobile device increases their productivity when they're in the field. So it's not just that they're using it, but that it has a purpose and it's helping them to be more effective and productive on the job.
As long as it's not when they're driving.
So, right.
So let's talk about social media access at work. Several years, not even several years ago, a few years back, this was verboten.
It was.
And
it was in the single digits.
Yeah,
in terms of government usage of, mm-hmm. of these sites.
Yeah, so in 2010, at the end of 2010, the rules changed because GSA struck a deal with the major social networks, outlining how those networks could use federal employee data, even statistically. And after that, the agencies loosened the reins. And you know, I know on LinkedIn, last summer, there were 1.4 million feds on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. My latest tally is closer to 1.7. So I know they're there. So what did your study show here?
Well, for the last several years, it's really flattened out. 50% of government are able to access a variety of social sites at work. However, I think the bigger point there is, even if they're not on the site at the office, they are there personally. So I think that's always something for contractors to keep in mind. What we've seen in the last year in terms of, I mean, all the top sites are being used, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn. LinkedIn saw the biggest jump 2013 over 2014. That's becoming an increasingly popular tool. and an increasingly successful tool for our government contractor clients. Interestingly, on Facebook and some of these other social sites too, defense has traditionally lagged behind civilian agencies in terms of their usage and presence. But in the last year, we've really seen that catch up. So there, in terms of usage, we don't see any significant difference between civilian and defense agencies.
Well, when I tallied the Army individual agencies, it is the number two employer on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So it's huge. You mentioned the online sites. Let's briefly go over e-newsletters and blogs. FedTech comes out every year with a top 50 IT blogs. And I love the list because, you know, some of the things I've never heard of, and when I look at them, they are, you know, truly informationally robust, but some of them are very focused on cloud or health IT, something like that. Others are broader. Jason Miller's Ask the CIO made the cut last year, which was very cool for Federal News Radio. But, you know, I've been pushing Jason's show to my clients who, you know, how do I find out what they're doing at this agency? Well, you know, 2 months ago, Jason did an interview with them. They talked about it on the radio. But let's start with e-newsletters. You know, they're obviously the publications have been doing them for a while, but a lot of e-publishers and companies do very good programs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mark, I think that e-newsletters are very viable. So we're seeing that about half of government says that they turn to e-newsletters for information. And the more interesting thing is the topics that are most popular. So topping the list, we've got defense topics, IT, training, scientific e-newsletters, and cybersecurity. So if you have the opportunity to get very topical on one of these e-newsletters, you could, you know, really target the right decision makers.
So if that's your
educational
area.
Content.
Yeah.
Well, and in the same study, the contractor e-newsletters don't score as high. They're not seen as credible. Association e-newsletters are very popular, very credible, as are, as you mentioned, Mark, trade publication e-newsletters have always been very successful. So that's something for federal marketers to think about. Perhaps rather than investing resources in your own, you want to have a presence on some of these, you know, association e-newsletters or trade publication e-newsletters.
Okay. Let's bounce over to that event question we touched on earlier. Your study goes over a 4-year span, 2011 to 2014. What are the issues here? It looks kind of like a roller coaster, but
well, essentially, Mark, what we're seeing is a decrease in event attendance from 2011 to the present.
Mm-hmm.
So we have more people saying that they're attending fewer events. In 2014, 58% said they attended fewer events. But what we're also seeing is that most people, or half of the population, is coming in the attending 1 to 3 events. So they might be still attending, but it's not as many as in the past.
Right.
So we had 36% saying that they attended 1 to 3 in 2014. And that's down from 52% in 2011. So that's a pretty significant decrease in 4 years.
It is. I mean, we've seen a continual decline there, and we don't go into the reasons behind it, but you're right. They are still attending some events. The events that they're attending, though, are not far away. They don't mm-hmm. require travel. They may be on site at an agency, or they may be in a nearby hotel. They're typically half day. I mean, the days of, you know, traveling far for a 3-day conference, there's just not room left in the budget for that.
No, no. And frankly, there was some bad PR.
Yes.
And, you know, yes. Probably
that
deserved.
Hurt, that hurt the event business.
Yeah.
It did.
And, yeah.
And still is.
And budget restrictions have really made free a desirable price point for government for attending these events.
Right. Free and local.
Yes.
But they are looking for other sources of information, Mark. And that's where I think webinars are becoming, you know, we're just seeing continual increase in webinar and then the online digital content, which I know you want to get into.
We're going to get into that in the next segment. I know the webinar participation is up, and I know some very significant growth has occurred for some of the major players in the market, primarily because of that webinar platform. Carahsoft, Immix are very heavily invested in this, and it pays obviously significant dividends. But before I end this segment, I want to talk or have you talk briefly about the differing opinions about how government gets information and training in light of the budget restrictions. So there's definitely a disconnect here between what the two sides are thinking.
Well, you know, Mark, we first asked this question back in 2013, and we saw the beginnings of those disconnects. And, you know, primarily what we saw is that government was turning to sources like trade publications and online podcasts and webinars at a much greater rate than contractors were planning to make investments in those areas. So in the most recent study, the Federal Content Marketing Review, we asked this question again, so 2 years later, and we were really surprised to see that contractors were, their top priority was marketing collateral, and that fell second to last on the government list.
Shouldn't even been on the damn list.
I was surprised to see that, you know, even though we had pretty widely publicized those gaps a couple of years ago, that there was still, I think it was is a fallback position for contractors. They were going with what they were comfortable with. But what government told us is that research reports and webinars are at the top of their list of valuable content. So not just what they're using, but what they consider valuable. And that is closely followed by e-newsletters, e-books and interactive publications, and online magazines.
Okay. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Back with Lisa and Monica after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guests today are Lisa DeZutti and Monica Make of Market Connections, marketconnectionsplural.inc.com. So wrap up the thought on that disconnect between what contractors want to push and what feds are choosing to dine on.
Well, I was just commenting on the break that across the board, when you look across the board on that question, the gaps are significant between what government values and what contractor priorities are in terms of providing that content. I mean, and the digital pieces alone, online magazines, ebooks, and publications, very highly valued by government. And the numbers are almost insignificant in terms of what contractors are doing to provide content in that way. So there's a lot of catch up in a lot of areas that contractors need to be doing.
Okay. Monica?
Yeah, so I was real concerned to see where contractors were putting their top priorities on marketing collateral. Blogs are also high on the list for contractors. I don't have an issue with blogs. I think they are a good resource, but it's all about what type of content you're putting there and what you're using. So, you know, when you look at the bottom of the contractor priority list and you see webinars, e-newsletters, research reports toward the bottom of the list, while they're at the top of government's list of valuable content, that's where I say, use your blog to disseminate this useful information. And on top of that, you have to think about the type of content you're putting out. Government is looking to be educated, not about products. They want best practices, trends. Keep me abreast of changing technology. Keep me in the loop on the latest innovation and how I can build a more effective and IT strategy for my organization.
They want to know what's happening in the commercial world. They want to know what their other federal colleagues are doing. So it's really best practices and lessons learned across the board.
Okay, let's dive in. Perfect segue to the 2015 Federal Content Marketing Review, which you guys just presented literally a few weeks ago. And again, you can download the overviews for both studies at the Market Connections site, marketconnectionsinc.com. First of all, who was part of this study? So let's look at Who was there?
We worked with Merit Group, which is a marketing firm, an agency that works with a lot of government contractors. So we teamed up with them nearly a year ago to start this process. We started talking about it and thinking about how we would use this. And, you know, for Merit Group, they were in the situation where they're working with clients and trying to advise them on their marketing strategies. And they were running into exactly what I'm talking about, where companies want to sort of default to the classic, you know, marketing collateral, focus on the website, you know, get my brand out there with my very specific message. But they were not really biting on using new digital techniques. They weren't necessarily going in the direction of content development. And so this study was a way for us to really put our finger on the pulse of what government considers valuable and what they turn to inform the procurement process. In the Federal Media and Marketing Study that we were talking about earlier, we look at usage. So it's just straight, what do you read? Where do you go for information? But we didn't ask, why do you go there? Or what do you rely on when you're making buying decisions? So in this study, we really framed it out in terms of the buying process and the decision-making process and staying abreast of technology and best practices.
Okay. And you had 150 contractors and 150 feds.
That's right.
Okay. So the response to the budget and travel restrictions showed growth in what areas and disconnects in what areas?
Well,
not disconnects. So you're going here. You did 2013 versus 2015.
Yes. So in 2013, we asked this question for the first time, you know, with respect to budget and travel restrictions. What are you and your colleagues at your organization doing to gather information and training that you previously acquired from events? So from 2013 to 2015, we saw significant increases in the use of webinars, discussions with coworkers, going to websites for information, relying on white papers and case studies, and having discussions with personnel from other agencies and departments. So, I mean, one interesting outgrowth is that maybe we're seeing a little bit more collaboration between agencies, where I think in 2013, when we first looked at this, there was a lot of concern that agencies would become more siloed because there weren't as many events. But it sounds like government has really tried to break down some of those walls. So I think that's a good thing. But
go ahead, Lisa. Let me just jump in. And it is a good thing. And the takeaway there for the contracting community is be part of those hallway conversations. If you can't be in the hallway, make sure you are informing that conversation and you're part of that conversation through the content that you're providing and the thought leadership that you're providing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So think about those case studies that we talked about. We have 53% of government saying that they are turning to white papers and case studies to get information in lieu of events. 73%, almost three quarters, are turning to webinars. That's a really big number, and that's up from 55%. And like I said earlier, we're seeing steady increase in the use of webinars. So, you know, the question then becomes, how do you make those webinars impactful? How do you make sure you're providing useful information? And that's where the educational content becomes incredibly important. It's not a brand message. Your brand message is almost subliminal. You're building your brand by being the thought leader, but you need to send a message about the technology, the training, the best practices, the innovation to help government be at, you know, on the cutting edge.
That's the hot button for them. That's what they're looking for. That's what's going to get butts in seats, so to speak, for the webinar. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to send that message. Yeah. And they're not just for the highly technical anymore. It used to be. Those were the highest consumers of webinars, but those days are gone as well. They are now much more widely used by a variety of decision makers within the federal government. Mm-hmm.
So, Mark, they told us that the top benefits of digital content for government are hot topics and trends, education, training, and best practices information.
What's the difference between the education and training side? Is education on a broader topic and training is on a specific technology?
I think the training is probably more hands-on. So we're seeing a lot more agencies doing virtual training, you know, where it's learning something specific to your job function.
Mm-hmm.
So for you know, I think that does present a huge opportunity, both in a line of business and from a marketing perspective.
Okay. Now, the hot topics and trends side, I mean, when you're talking about a tool like a blog, you have an immediate response device where you can do a blog post and then tweet it, post it on various social networks, you know, get it out to the community that knows who the heck you are.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is where the type of content really comes in. Research reports were the most valuable digital content that government
And how did cited. They rate with vendors on producing?
Low, Mark. Low. Wait, let me find that number. I think research reports
were... It was like 20% or
something. That was 35, I think.
35? Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Versus 69% for government, 35% right. for contractors.
So
with the
virtually
hot topics
half.
And trends, it's not just what you think are the hot topics and trends, but
right.
you need to talk to the market about what the hot topics and trends are and provide real education, not just, you know, oh, I heard somebody talking about this last week, and so therefore it's a hot topic. But when you can provide the market validated information on those hot topics and trends, that's when it becomes valuable.
Right. So, you know, like I wrote about soup over the last couple of weeks because Soup 5, you know, everybody knew the final iteration was coming out and the awards would be made. But that's not a hot topic for everybody. Mm-hmm. But it's a hot topic for especially for manufacturers, because there's a ton of manufacturers that are represented there. But it's a very hot topic for the 150, 160 companies that actually want a piece of the action. Mm-hmm. So I just want to emphasize that, you know, what's hot for some may not be hot across the market.
You can't peanut butter it across the
no,
market. You can't.
No. And
it doesn't
there's,
work.
Yeah, there's going to be pockets like that. So, you know, if there is a big data glitch, is that a hot topic for the market? No, it's a footnote for the market. But if you are in charge of data in government, it may be of particular interest to you.
Well, I think it goes beyond topics, and even that spreads to the use of tools. In the study that Monica is sharing, Twitter hasn't scored, didn't score well. It hasn't scored well in some of our other studies that we've done within federal government. However, I know of a client that's using it quite successfully for a very specific, particular agency. And so you have to be willing to experiment with different tools, different topics, mm-hmm. and different things are going to work in different agencies depending on who you're targeting.
Yep.
Well, and also using data to help inform your position and your angle around a topic. So to give you another example, a client of ours, SolarWinds, has done research studies with us for a couple of years around cybersecurity. Now, cybersecurity is a hot topic, but it's a big topic, and it's a very well-covered topic. But their angle has really focused on insider threats and how to identify those insider threats, how prevalent they are within agencies, how agencies are prioritizing and funding to address them. And this has been a fantastic position for SolarWinds to take. Everything is publicly available. They've put out the research report. They've shared a white paper. They've gotten a tremendous amount of media coverage because they're not talking about it in general. They're talking specifically about an angle that affects clients that they are working with and trying to do business with.
Okay, we're going to take our last break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Back with Lisa and Monica after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guests today are Lisa DeZutti and Monica Make of MarketConnectionsInc.com. You can download the overviews to the studies that we've been discussing and other studies as well at their website. It is, I believe, it's gated content, so you have to give them your name and email, so big deal. It's more than worth that price of entry. Let's jump to why do govies share content?
Yeah, we asked why they pass content along to colleagues, why they share it with their boss, with their management team. top three answers that we got to that question were includes valuable data points, contains thought-provoking ideas, and it comes from an independent third party. 70% plus of government respondents said that's why they will share or pass content along. The key takeaway there for the government contracting community is to make sure you are incorporating those three points into whatever content you're publishing. What are you pushing out in the market? How valuable are the data points? Do they resonate? Are they relevant? You can be a little edgy, perhaps, or be thought-provoking, take a stance. And do you have independent validation, some third-party data that you're including? Those are all things that are going to make your content more interesting, more likely to be read, and more likely to be shared with others within the federal community.
Okay.
So, and I think this speaks, Mark, to not just what's in your content, but also the channels that you use to distribute it, because the coming from an independent third party could mean, you know, data points that you're incorporating from an independent third party, or using a third party publication as your distribution channel. Mm-hmm. So that it's not, again, just take my word for it, I know what I'm talking about, trust me, but I've gotten this third party validation from outside of myself and my organization.
Okay. The social channels most used, I take umbrage with one, but it's your study, so go for it.
The top social channels?
Yeah.
Facebook, YouTube.
Facebook? No.
Yeah, in the Federal Content Marketing Review.
Oh, the most recent study.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So government told us that Google+, almost half of government said that they find Google+ to be the most effective social channel for information during the procurement process. 32% said YouTube and 31% said LinkedIn.
Yeah, I don't see govies on Google+, though.
Well, so I think that the characterization that's important here, Mark, is how we ask this question. Mm-hmm. How effective are the following channels in delivering content that informs and educates your buying process? So as opposed to just asking, do you use this channel? Do you go there?
But okay.
Yeah,
is it effective for informing your buying process?
It popped up on the media study too, though. Not mm-hmm. quite as high, but
yeah.
33% on the media study said that they were using Google+.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much longer those percentages are going to hold for Google+.
And but Google+ is supposed to be going away at some point.
Well, exactly. We've had that rumor around, and I've thrown fuel on that fire for about 2 years.
Well, so I'll give you an example, Mark. One of our clients is pursuing a particular opportunity within an agency,
mm-hmm.
and they've done a couple of Google+ hangouts with a third
party. See, that's something Facebook and LinkedIn don't have.
Right,
so.
Right. So they're leveraging it in a very strategic way. They're partnering with an association, so they've got that independent third party validation. And then the content that they shared was interesting, it was relevant, it was unique, and so it was a live chat, and then they also put out some data and some infographics to go with it. So I think if you get creative in how you leverage it, it's a relatively inexpensive investment and can really be influential in the conversation.
Okay. So on the channel alignment side, is there a difference between how industry feels and how government feels? Obviously, I think on all of these, there's going to be some disconnect, but you know, in a few areas, they seem to be pretty close.
Yeah, they're not huge disconnects in all of them. But whenever you ask this type of a question to federal government or other audiences, they are always going to rate them across the board lower than those that are putting content out on those channels. So you do see gaps across the board between government and contractors. They're pretty close, though, and we've seen some catch up in recent years between investing in corporate websites. So contractors have caught up there, still a top channel used by government. You see some bigger disconnects on LinkedIn, which I found interesting, a pretty big gap there, 77% of contractors using LinkedIn as a channel, 31% of government indicated using that as a channel. I think in terms of information to do my job, that's one of the reasons that we saw government score a little bit lower there.
Mm-hmm.
I think they tend to use it more for networking, job mm-hmm. hopping, you know, rather I think than they getting also, information yeah. to do their jobs.
I right. think they also use it to vet contractors, especially absolutely. The subject matter experts on
yeah.
RFPs.
Yeah. So you have to think about purpose. So if you're in a sales role or if you're in a marketing role that's supporting strategic pursuits, LinkedIn may not be the best place for distributing that influential content mm. that should affect the procurement process. That doesn't mean LinkedIn is not a good place to be, but you have to think about what you're trying to accomplish.
Well, and I agree, and I think that's true for a lot of what showed in terms of channel gaps, because, and Mark, you and I have talked about this, you know, LinkedIn didn't score that highly with Gubbies, but LinkedIn is a top tool for market connections. I mean, we use a link, you know, we post a lot of content in particular LinkedIn groups, and mm-hmm. it works very well for us. It yep. drives a lot of traffic to our website. Monica mentioned our client SolarWinds. They have used SlideShare as a successful channel for some of their thought leadership content. SlideShare didn't score that well with Gubbies in this study. So it goes to my earlier comment. You can't peanut butter one channel across the entire government. You have to be willing to have some sort of an integrated strategy and measure what you're doing and be willing to make a change. And what works in one agency may not work in another.
Okay. Final thoughts.
I'll add one more thing, Mark. We did not talk about governments just in general most effective online channels during the procurement process. 83% said search engine. So that was at the top of the list. So to me, that presents an opportunity to do some more targeted online advertising and use search marketing more effectively, which I think is an area of room for improvement for the mm-hmm. contracting community. Government-focused online communities like GovLoop, I think, present another opportunity that contractors probably aren't leveraging as extensively as they could be.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you still have your traditional channels, particularly companion websites to trade publications and general news publications. I think not to be forgotten, especially as government continues to turn to digital, look for the opportunities to use your content in different ways on these channels that have an extensive reach that you maybe don't have with your own blog or with your own set of contacts and connections on social media.
And I would just add to that, think about using different tools in terms of different roles within government. So if individuals are involved in setting requirements, they're going to be more likely to respond to research reports. If you're targeting individuals that are more involved in the final decision-making process or are on evaluation committees, they are going to be more interested in case studies. So you can get very granular, and the study that's available online will help you do that.
Right, and not one size does not fit all here. You have to shape it to your particular niche.
Right.
If you're really focused down into a narrow subsection of cyber or health IT or big data, focus on that. Don't go broad. And remember that your content is not sales material. It is Please. Content. So, ladies, thank you very much for coming in. I greatly appreciate it. Lisa DeZutti and Monica Make of Market Connections, marketconnectionsinc.com. This is not my day job. I do advise companies on all aspects of marketing to the government, and I teach companies, sales, business development, and executives how to properly leverage LinkedIn. You can reach me at marketfederaldirect.net. And thank you for listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.